It's because of recent changes in my country that I am with you today. And these changes have come about because of you and other lovers of freedom and justice who contributed towards a global awareness of our situation.
She urged her country's military and all of Burmese society to cooperate with the government's current political reforms, and she said she and her party stood ready to play any role needed for national reconciliation. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Oslo.
Air Force officials say an unmanned space shuttle landed in California this morning, completing a secret 15-month test flight. It's the second time the robotic space plane X-37B touched down on its own at California's Vandenberg Air Force Base. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse.
Y'all, Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. It's so nice to have all of you here at the kitchen table with us today, and what a great show we have, and what a beautiful day it is as well to talk about our favorite subject, cooking. And joining me at the kitchen table is our executive producer, Michelle Yark. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, didn't you?
I'm doing good.
I think I said fine.
Fine.
I am just fine.
You're just fine. well, that's a good word. I like that. I like that word. And, of course, sitting next to you, who's just fine, too, is our historian and archivist, Shirley Sands. How are you, Shirley?
I'm great, thank you.
You fine, too?
Yeah, I'm fine, too.
And across the glass wall over there, two guys who are always fine, as long as I've got food, as long as I'm shipping food their way, they're fine, too, and that's the McLaughlin boys, David and Derwin. How are y'all doing over there?
Well, you know, this week I'm dining on duck from last week's show. So.
Yeah, I can't feed the legs for you. You see what kind of guy I am, huh?
Man, you know, if I had to pick anybody to work for in radio, I got to say...
Thank you.
It would be this guy I worked for back...
It'd be Michelle and Shirley. I know what you're talking about. Well, I mean, there are some advantages to working for an old cook like me, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm always thinking about something good to eat.
Well, I tell you, that's truth, man.
We have a great show today, and we thank you so much for being with us. I absolutely love salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned salmon because salmon is so available everywhere today, and it's beautiful. Salmon reminds me of that category of foods in the South or in Louisiana that's not indigenous to this region, and people naturally assume that it's just not as good as what we have. And a good example of that is things like lamb. Oh, we don't eat lamb here because we eat beef and we eat pork. But lamb, that kind of tastes...
It's foreign food.
It's foreign food, you know. Anyway, and salmon kind of falls into that category. Now you go into the beautiful seafood markets of every one of these Epicurean stores, and here you have the wild-caught salmon, you have the East Coast salmon, you have the Nova Scotia salmon, you have the West Coast salmon, you have the Alaskan salmon. A few years ago, I had the great fortune to be invited to go salmon fishing by my good friend Cy Brown of Bruce Foods. He's the guy who makes Louisiana Gold, Louisiana hot sauce. He does Casa Fiesta beans and all of those kind of things. Lo and behold, we ended up jumping on a plane to go to British Columbia. Well, coming from St. James and I was a young boy, I thought we were going to England. And look, there was a lot of apprehension on the trip because, number one, I was not a fisherman. Number two, I had kind of started my business off and I needed to be there. And I didn't want to take a vacation. I wasn't interested in a vacation. I needed to be on the stove, and I was miserable, but
so,
I had to go.
Uh-huh. 30 years later, nothing has changed.
Well, yeah, I know. But anyway... We went to British Columbia, and I cannot even begin to describe to our listeners the experience. We went to a place called April Point, and we went salmon fishing. It was nothing, as I say, I had ever experienced before.
Was it like June?
No, it was probably, it was probably somewhere in there. It might have been around June, I would imagine. It was still cold. The mountains, in many cases, still had a little snow on top of them up in that area. It was crisp and cold in the morning, and of course, that was the place where the Native Americans were still roasting the salmon on all the wood frames. The tides would come in and out every day, and the water would drop about 40 feet in the bay, and of course, you could walk out with buckets, as the Native Americans did, and pick up oysters and fish and spot prawns, and you could pick up clams all over the beach. I mean, they were just jumping on the beach because the water rushed out of the tide, took the water out of the strait so fast that whole fish and shrimp, 10 inches long, these beautiful prawns, were just jumping all over the beach. You just ran out and picked it up, just like an Easter egg hunt. So I would get up early in the morning and put on this big yellow suit that made me look like a spaceman, and I needed it because it was cold out, and you had a beautiful guide, and you got into these Boston whalers, and out you went, one man and one guide in his pole, and they just sent you out in the middle of the strait, and it pulled 20 lengths, 3 foot long. I remember the process, and then you were waiting for that big one. You were waiting for that big one while watching the walruses come on up, and while watching the eagles come down, and I mean, it was just magnificent. I mean, it was a piece of heaven. It was at that point that I came to realize my love of salmon, you know, along the coast of Alaska and the Bering Sea and along the Canadian and Washington and Oregon coast, and the Pacific salmon are just absolutely magnificent, as well as these others. And the life cycle of these animals are really what's so amazing, you know. They make their way from the sea or the freshwater rivers and streams where they're born, you know. So they're born in freshwater, these salmon, and the life cycle is just, if you watch a documentary on this, you just can't believe what you're seeing. First of all, the salmon, which is different from most fish, crabs will do this as well, live in both freshwater and saltwater. And each salmon will begin as a small egg in a stream bed. They hatch, and then they begin their journey downstream toward the ocean. So they're in freshwater at this point. They spend a couple of years in the streams and rivers where they grow into these little smolt, these juvenile salmon. And at the mouth of the stream and the rivers, the smolt school together, and their bodies kind of adapt slowly to this emerging seawater, and they start to pick up the need for the salt water. The young adult salmon then heads out to sea, where they spend several years. They will actually travel almost the globe. They'll travel thousands of miles and thousands of miles in the ocean, swimming and maturing. And then once they're fully matured, they swim back to the exact spot. I'm not talking about an inch to the left or an inch to the right. They come to the exact spot in the original stream or river where they readapt to fresh water, and then they swim to that spot where they were born. So wherever they were born, that's where they're going to die. Once they arrive there at that destination, the female lays their eggs, and of course the male swims there and fertilizes the eggs, and then they die. The female dies within a week of those eggs fertilizing, and then the whole, and of course the death of the salmon creates this really rich, nutrient-filled environment where the new young salmon kind of hatched into this rich, rich, rich environment that comes about from the death of the mom and the dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So immediately the body disintegrates of the
salmon.
Talk
about a life cycle.
Well, it's strange to even see the process, because they hatch the egg. I mean, the eggs are laid, and the salmon just sit there protecting the eggs, and then within a week or so, the body just starts to disintegrate. Just like this beautiful, lively salmon that's just magnificent, ready to eat, then all of a sudden, it just dies. And not only dies, but just crumbles away. It's hard to, it's amazing to see. And centuries have passed. North American fishermen and cooks looked forward to these salmon runs, as they call them, an opportunity to freeze or can the fish for future use. The Native Americans salted and smoked the salmon on these alder wood mats, and they fed themselves all year, and they wrapped the smoked fish in maple syrup, and they made what was called squaw can. sand in. And then they mashed it with nuts and fruit into pemmican, and they used it as nutrient-filled fruit, meat all year long. There's even historical records that speak of early European settlers getting tired of this salmon-rich diet, as I'm sure in Louisiana the early settlers did of corn, right? In the early 19th century, New England began shipping canned salmon across the U.S. To California. 25 years later, California returned the favor by shipping all of its own Pacific salmon to the eastern market. Today, of course, we cook with fresh, beautiful salmon, but that was not the case. In fact, cookbooks as late as the 1950s have most of the recipes, if not all of the recipes, calling for canned salmon, or salmon, as we call it in the South. And that is because canned salmon was available. It was easier to get. And then, of course, we adapted that taste to what real salmon tastes like. I mean, you didn't taste fresh salmon here. So if you want to make a croquette of salmon, which was one of the famous things, or salmon salad of some kind, then, of course, you use the canned salmon. It wasn't until, I think, Jean-Louis Paladin and that group back in the 1960s and 70s and even early 80s that we started to see this interest just going crazy when the French cuisine and European cuisine and Nouvelle cuisine just went crazy in the United States. And all of a sudden you started to see the very famous French poached salmon poached in white wine and served with a sauce Veronique with grapes on top of it, and everybody went crazy for fresh salmon. And then it was the healthy thing to eat nice poached salmon. Then, of course, we found out about plank roasted salmon, the way the Indians had been doing it for 1,000 years, next to the fire, the plank roasted salmon. And then we discovered the salmon tartare, married with the tuna tartare, and we started to eat it raw, and it became unbelievable. And then salmon was everywhere on every menu. Unfortunately, today, due to decades of overfishing, the loss of spawning habitat took place, and pollution and many other factors that just created big problems in fishing in general, but salmon in particular, we lost a lot of our fish. Fortunately, Pacific salmon in Alaska is among the most intensive managed species in the world, and of course with the monitoring of both the fish populations and the fishers themselves, we're starting to see some really, really great fish. And there's no question that Alaskan salmon dominates the West Coast salmon markets, landing over 10 times, I found this very interesting, 10 times the amount of salmon that comes out of California, Oregon, and Washington combined. So Alaskan fisheries are really, Alaska has done just an unbelievable job, and it doesn't hurt to have things like the fishing shows on TV and Wild Catch and all of these other things that really...
Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, Deadliest Catch and all of that. So anyway, y'all, a lot of great salmon available. Salmon is a wonderful... The grilled salmon, nothing better, I think. And of course, there's many, many different ways to eat. And I like to eat it every way possible. Today, we're going to have a fabulous guest on the show. We are going to cook a great salmon recipe. Shirley may even have some topics for us to read on with salmon. But more importantly, partly, we're going to talk about one of my favorite fish available in all of your supermarkets or fish cases today, salmon. Don't go anywhere.
Each drop of rain falls a million times its own length to crash upon Earth's floor, and with its pain causes life to start anew. Each second fights its way magically through your entire life, like a salmon traveling upstream to its final destination, and with its golden sight, life ends to start anew. Each man lives far beyond his span and rides the life of all mankind.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up on Bill Street Caravan, we've got a tribute show to the late Michael Burks. Michael Burks was a guitar player that we lost recently, and we're going to spend the entire hour listening and enjoying the legacy he has left behind. That plus our feature host, Dick Rachelson, will continue his look at the real Bill. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
I'm your host, Megan Brown, for Encore. Join me as we journey through the continuing timeline of our culture. We'll discover the music, relive festivals, and get to know the people. Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KRVS.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
You're a salmon, but you live under the sea. You're a salmon, but you're so much bigger than me. Very different, but together we can be indifferent. You may be a fish, I may be a boy, but together we can be a fish and a boy.
Anyway, y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up. As I mentioned, the best tasting show on radio. And today we were just talking about my trip up to up to April Point, you know, up in British Columbia, and doing a little salmon fishing. And I forgot to tell you, Michelle, it was at that point, not only picking up all of the seafood after the tide went out and we could walk out there, but those 8-inch oysters that, you know, we love oysters here.
Oh,
but
yeah.
To see 8-inch, these are, well, I might have to ask our next guest about that. Those oysters are still there, right?
They must. I bet they are.
And you know what I discovered there? The ling cod, which was now one of my favorite fish. The black cod's up there, too. I love good fresh cod, whereas I often thought of cod as just those little blocks of stuff frozen that you eat in my high school cafeteria. Right? Now I really know the difference. Anyway, you have a great guest with us today, so why don't you introduce him?
Absolutely. Riley Starks is joining us. He is a longtime commercial fisherman, farmer, and innkeeper living on Lummi Island, which is in Puget Sound in Washington State.
How do you get so lucky? I mean, he had to be born there. I mean, how lucky can you be to live in a place?
Live in a place like that, paradise.
Oh, paradise.
Have you looked at some of the pictures? Life on the island?
Look, I hadn't been to Lummi Island, but I'm going.
He'll invite you.
As a guest chef. I'm going to be a guest chef there.
Maybe we're going to get to go salmon fishing before all said and done.
No, let's beg, okay?
He fishes with the Lummi Island Wild Co-op, which uses an ancient form of reef net fishing to catch salmon. And along with his wife, Judy Olson, owns Nettle Farms and runs Willow's Inn. Willow's Inn restaurant was named by the New York Times as, and I love this, one of 10 restaurants worth a plane ride.
That's right.
I love that.
That's when you know you're at a special place, when the planes go up to the dock and let you out. Then you're at a special place.
We are so excited, and it is indeed a pleasure to welcome Riley to Stirring It Up. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Riley, you're in one of the most beautiful places in the world. Were you born in that area?
Yeah, I was born and raised here, yeah.
Wow.
And we're having a little bit of a late spring, though. So.
Still a little chilly there?
Still a little chilly, yeah. We're just starting to come into some nice weather here this weekend.
Wow. Well, I can imagine how beautiful it must be there. And congratulations on all of the wonderful accolades that you have put together up there. The New York Times did a great article on y'all, and of course we discovered that as one of the 10 best restaurants worth a plane ride. Is Brian still your wonderful young chef up there?
No, it's...
Blaine, I'm sorry, Blaine.
Blaine,
I said
yes,
Blaine.
Yes.
Blaine, I'm sorry.
It's Blaine Wetzel. Yes, he is.
He's been getting some wonderful accolades for a young man up there. I know he's trained in some great places. Come from Scottsdale, too, and I was reading where he actually worked at the Phoenician for a little while before he came your way, huh?
Yes, he did, yeah. And then he went up to Europe and worked at NOMA in Copenhagen.
Worked with Chef Rene over there.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
and that was, by the way, mentioned the 210 best restaurant in the world. My God, how can you?
Yes, exactly.
Now here's a 24, 25 year old kid, you know, Blaine Wetzel, and he's worked with not only the Phoenician, which is I was just talking to the chef at the Phoenician a couple of days ago because I'm going to do an event over there in the spring to find out that Blaine worked there, but then at with Chef Rene at the top restaurant in the world in 2010. So you have a great young guy there for sure. So congratulations
yeah.
on all of your great efforts. So just
thank
absolutely
you so much.
Wonderful.
So you know, we're of course talking about the Northwest, very famous for salmon and for fishing in general. But when did you start fishing? Did you grow up fishing?
I started fishing. I graduated from college here in Bellingham, and I started fishing the month I graduated. I bought a boat, so I've fished commercially for 40-some-odd years now.
Wow, and what about the reef fishing? Tell us about that. Have you always done that?
No. Lummi Island is about 10, 15 miles from Bellingham, and it's sort of a little world all by itself. And for centuries, the Lummi tribe have been reef netting right off the coast, just, you know, a stone's throw away from the beach. And so that has become a sort of a cultural fishery for the island. And when I moved to the island in 1992, I wanted to become part of the culture, and I also wanted to fill my freezer with the best quality salmon I could find. Because, you know, I've fished all my life, and I know the difference between amazing fish and good fish.
Obviously, salmon is the mainstay in the area, but you have such a great variety of seafoods and shellfish in that area as well, right?
We do. Just yesterday, I picked up 3 or 4 40-pound halibut. That was the last little halibut fishery that we had here. Last week, 100 pounds of live spot prawns that we keep alive in our tank. So it's all from right out in front of the Willows.
I did have an opportunity years ago to fly up to British Columbia and went up to a place called April Point. Are you familiar with that place?
I sure am, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I don't know how far away that is from your area, but I remember thinking, as a guy from South Louisiana who comes from the Gulf of Mexico and all of the great seafood and shellfish species, and the thing that took me aback more than anything else was just the absolute grandeur of the area, the beauty of it, but yet at the same time the high quality of the fisheries, and to go out and experience for the first time catching a salmon as part of the weekend that I was there doing. I was actually doing some cooking there. I was invited as a guest chef to do a weekend. It was carnival season in Louisiana, and we were just and I was invited up. But I've never forgotten the experience of walking out, because the tides had gone out in the afternoon, and to walk out there and pick up the shrimp or the prawns and pick up oysters. And And I tell people, I actually went out there and saw oysters like 8 inches long in the shells. And they said, yeah, come on, you're exaggerating. I said, I'm not. I picked sacks of them. And we did an oyster roast that night with all the Louisiana flavors. Now, would you please tell everybody I wasn't kidding, that this is the truth?
No, you weren't kidding. I always tell people it's paradise. If you're a food lover, it's all right here. Not just 8-inch oysters, but we have clams that are probably, I don't know, they stretch out at least a foot.
Oh, the razor. You have razor clams and the gooey ducks up there as well. Huh?
The gooey ducks are the big ones. And
yeah,
we serve them at our restaurant, too.
Yeah, and I love those. I love those as well. We knew you were a fisherman, but then creating an inn that is getting all of these accolades. Now, what brought you into designing or getting into a restaurant that would also include as many accolades as the fishing?
I have the same aspirations of every great chef, which is to just retire with an inn and a restaurant. The only thing is, I found out it's a lot more work than I thought. But I think fishermen up here are, they love food. It seems to go hand in hand. It was sort of an organic evolution of wanting to produce the best food, best seafood, and eventually I found what I think is the best chef to show that off.
Let's talk about salmon a little bit. I was explaining on the show a minute ago that here in Louisiana, where again we have all of the great warm water, all the great Gulf species here, we have so much fish and shellfish that it wasn't until probably the 1980s at best, or maybe even early 90s, that we as a group of people started to enjoy the taste of wonderful fresh salmon coming from your area. The people of course the Pacific Northwest and then, of course, the Atlantic Northeast, familiar with salmon and doing a lot of things with it. How have you seen the growth of salmon as a mainstay on menus across the U.S.?
You know, it has to be on every menu here in the Northwest. Salmon is the icon, maybe the single cultural icon of this part of the world. And I think it spread into other parts of the U.S. with the Copper River phenomenon, where people started to realize, wow, there's this, you know, really fatty salmon that's amazing, and you can actually even fly it out fresh. And gradually, sort of like, you know, fine wines, people realize, well, there's this Copper River, and then if you dig a little deeper, there's even more and even better. And so gradually, I think it's spread pretty much throughout the U.S.
Now, are you telling me that there's salmon better than Copper River? Am I hearing this for the first time as a chef? Because believe me, I get my shipment. I'll wait, not patiently, but I'll wait for my Copper River salmon to be sent to me by my chef friends on the West Coast. Now you're telling me there's something better.
You were getting seconds, John.
Tell me about
it. I hate to disillusion you, John.
Okay. Now that you are now Riley, that you are my new best friend. Tell me about the best salmon.
The thing about salmon is it's a cyclical fish. You know, it lives normally 4 years, and it starts in the river and then it comes back to the river. And so all through that 4 years, when it's growing, it's building up fat, because the last journey that it makes is up the river to spawn and die. And so once it starts smelling fresh water, it stops eating. And so it has to have enough fat to get as far as it knows it needs to go. So Copper River, which is a beautiful, beautiful place, and the salmon are amazing there, they can go as far as 350 miles. So they have to have a lot of fat.
Wow.
But here in the Fraser River salmon, they go as much as 1,000 miles. And so they have to store up more fat, and that fat results in amazing flavor. And I would venture to say the Fraser River sockeye are probably the best sockeye in the world.
Michelle,
I'm making a notation of writing it right now.
Riley,
I'm sending a text to the chefs.
I'm sending a text right now to Blaine. I'm sending a text to Blaine. I'm going to say,
your new source?
Here's my UPS number right here.
Well, you know, you need to come up here, John, and go fishing with us.
I absolutely do. And I don't know why all of my travels around the globe cooking and all the things that we do with cooking and television, radio, I desperately need to come up to see you, because first of all, I'm so impressed with what you have done. I'm so impressed, and I still want to talk about the advantages of this hands-on harvesting. But I'm just really impressed when I see folks like yourself who have done it, but done it so well that you're recognizing these places that are just magnificent. I ask myself, why in the heck hadn't I been there? Why hadn't I come?
You got to take a vacation to do that.
Well, I know, but I don't have to take a vacation. I can go. I can jump in the kitchen with Blaine and Riley, and we can cook and have fun too. I mean, that's
absolutely
what we do. That's what we do.
Yes, we get chefs every summer. As a matter of fact, we're this summer again. So we would love to have you come up and see for yourself and taste for yourself. I think Greg Atkinson, he wrote an article about.
I know Greg very well. He's a good friend of ours. Absolutely. I knew him when he was over with the Candlelesses, and know him well. He does did a little writing for Food Arts, and so I know Greg well. I want you to tell me how to get one of those fish, and I will definitely do something with it on the show to talk about it a little bit. But tell us about the process of the fishing, this reef net fishing that goes back, I guess, to Native Americans in the Northwest. I'm not sure. Tell us about it.
It does, yes. I'll just try to set the stage for you. This fishing takes place on Lummi Island off of a bay called Lego Bay. A beach looks out straight onto Orcas Island, west-facing, just gorgeous. And we have a set of barges. They don't have power on them, but they're 40-foot by 12-foot barges that are tied to giant can buoys. So they're anchored out all season long. We put them out July 4th, and then we don't pull them in until October. So they stay out there, and they have towers on them. And if you stand up in this tower, which is about 20 feet over the water, you can see an artificial reef that each set of barges has in front of it. And we build these every year with just lines and ribbons. And so if you look down, you can actually see the little ribbons. They look like eelgrass. And the reef goes down from, in our case, 60 feet. It brings it the fish up to 20 feet. So they gradually follow this funnel-shaped reef until we can see them from the tower. So we actually watch the school of fish swim in its natural formation over the head of the net. And when the whole school is over the net, we just lift the net up. And it's a quick process. We use electric winches that are solar powered, so there's hardly any noise.
Wow.
And and then this school of fish is caught in less than a minute, and then dumped into our live well, and they just swim. They don't die. They just swim around until we decide that it's time to do something with them.
I mean that's an incredible process. Wow. Shirley, you had a question about we talked about fishing, but what about eating? Right.
They're fabulous dishes, and when you and Chef Blaine get together and you have this fresh salmon, what is your favorite way to prepare it? If there is a favorite, of course. It's always hard.
Oh, there's a favorite.
Okay.
Yeah, we have, so in the Willows, we have a wood stone oven.
Okay.
That's a big, it's a big stone oven made here near Bellingham. And all we do is just fillet the fish. We take the fin bones out and then drizzle a little bit of olive oil, salt and pepper, lay it straight in the wood stone, and it cooks there for, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes, and it comes out, and what happens is the natural flavor of the salmon is what you taste. You're just not, it's so good that you don't really need to do hardly anything to it.
That sounds delicious.
It does. It absolutely does.
Tell us what we need to know when we go to the fish market and we're trying to buy a piece of salmon, and particularly with farm-raised salmon versus wild and the many, many different varieties of salmon that there are.
Sure. Now, here we're the Pacific Northwest and Alaska, we're very biased against farm salmon for lots of different reasons. But I think the biggest reason is the flavor is nowhere near as good. And the nutritional value is also not very good. But the way it works in every place where there's a natural salmon run is there's a succession of species. It starts with Chinook, so the biggest ones come first, usually in May, and then they're followed by sockeye, which is our main fishery here, and then on odd numbered years, so every other year, they're followed by pink salmon, which are only two-year-old salmon, but they're really abundant and amazing. And then afterward in the fall, beginning in September and October, we get coho, which is silvers, and then we get chum salmon. And so really, no matter where you go, that succession is going to happen in one way or another.
Hmm.
So the flavor profile of every single one of those is quite different.
In mid-America, where people are listening to our show that may, in fact, not have access daily to the quality of salmon that you have in your area, I just encourage people to first of all, ask the fishmonger to tell the story about the fish that they carry. Make sure that they are looking at this at the wild versus the farm-raised, obviously. And then it's all about the handling and the cooking of it. And just mentioning the wood stone oven, just quickly, simply cooking the fish is probably the best way to do it. Just as simple to get it from the water to the table is the best way to do it. Riley, I cannot thank you enough for, first of all, sharing your passion with us. And I'll send you an email, and you should, I want certainly your young chef to be aware of our new restaurant opening in New Orleans. So I'm going to definitely talk to, send you a little email about that. And we would love to come up and maybe even do a show from your area up there. It's got to be just fascinating. So we're going to stay in touch, okay?
Very good. I sure appreciate your all that you do, and I'm so glad to be on your show.
Well, thank you, and
thanks,
we will have all of Riley's information, all of the inn's information on our website, jfalls.com, so it'll all be right there. Y'all, we'll be back in just a minute.
Like the wild cat of Scotland, both exclusive and a loser, they'll never capture you. Believe me, they want to. Got it be like catch a salmon in New York. That'd be like trying to catch a
Series. I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Jouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club Radio Program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Looking for a youthful perspective on classical music?
Well, I'm going to play the Liszt Transcendental Etude No. 7. It's very exciting and energetic, and there's hard-hitting parts and soft parts, and overall, it's a pretty good piece.
Look no further than From the Top. Join me, Christopher O'Reilly, for our 10th anniversary season, each week right here on NPR.
Tuesday night at 7 on KRVS.
Soy Fernando Pérez Villar. Únanse a mi programa Espacio Latino este domingo a las 5 p.m. para que escuche buena música latina e información sobre la cultura latina aquí en el sur de Luisiana.
That's Espacio Latino, coming up this Sunday evening at 5 here on KRVS.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana. KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
I was a cook, and she was a waitress, down at Salty Sam Seafood Cafe. And somewhere between the clam juice and the seaweed salad, some little shrimp just lured her away.
Oh, I lobster, and never flounder.
He wrapped his line around her and they drove off in his cart.
Oh, I lobster and never flounder. I octopus his face in, he'll only break her heart.
another great food song right there. First he lobster, then he flounder. Anyway, y'all, welcome back to Starting It Up. I tell you, Riley, we can't thank him enough what
Absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely. Riley Stark.
And he surely told us about the best salmon. Anyway, we will have all of his information on Lummi Island wild reef net salmon on our website if you go to jfalls.com. And then, of course, Michelle, you see our Starting It Up thing up there, right?
Our Facebook.com/Starting It Up Radio.
Or you can tweet me on my Twitter. Well, we do want to welcome you back to Starting It Up, and we do want to thank Riley because what a great guy he was. And we do need to take trips like this. I dare say that I only went salmon fishing once up at Campbell River in British Columbia, and I still remember every detail. It was absolutely fabulous. And as you say, yes, you need to take a vacation to do things like this, and it's absolutely worthwhile. Salmon is an excellent source of omega-3 fatty acids, proteins, minerals, and vitamins. It's always been called one of the most, one of the healthiest fish in the world if you cooked it in a healthy fashion. The fat is also primarily monounsaturated fat, 4.5 grams, and a polyunsaturated fat, 2 grams. Fish high in omega-3 fatty acids, which of course is everybody knows that's good for you. Fatty acids also, those omega-3s are also believed to reduce a risk of heart attack and all of that. Plus, 1 3-ounce serving of salmon contains 22.3 grams of protein. And that's 50% of the daily requirements, you know, that for women, 41% for men. You cook salmon, Michelle.
Not often enough, but I do.
But it's easy to cook. People are a little afraid to cook salmon. Poaching it in a little lightly salted water for just a couple of minutes. You bring your water up to 190 degrees. I always put a little salt, a little pepper, a bay leaf, some thyme, and some tarragon in the water, and I simmer it for a couple of minutes just to put all those flavors in it. I make sure I have about 2 inches because I want to make sure it covers the fish. So I use just a small little pan. You know, I don't put it in one of these big old, you know, just enough to for 2 portions or 3 portions or 4 portions, whatever you're going to cook for. And then you bring it to a simmer for a couple minutes. Then you reduce it, put a thermometer in it, keep it at 190. And once you get it at 190, you just drop the whole fillets down in there. And it only takes about 5 to 7 minutes. then you just scoop it out, and it's picked up all the flavor of those of that lightly salted water. I like to use fish stock, too. You can go to the store and get shellfish stock in the store, and those things, you poach it in shellfish stock. It's absolutely delicious. Fresh, wonderful salmon poached is magnificent. But what about just throwing it on a grill?
Yeah.
You know, that little grill you have?
I don't think I've ever actually done it on the grill. I usually do it in the oven in just a little...
So you've never gone outside and threw it on your grill?
I don't think
grill.
I have.
I mean, nothing's better than grilled salmon. Nothing. Just quickly grill over a nice...
I mean, I guess it would be the same way, right? Just kind of salt and pepper and granulated garlic.
Lightly seasoned, you want to taste the fish, lightly seasoned fresh herbs. And on salmon, I always use a little thyme and a little tarragon. Just rub it in, a little salt and pepper, throw it onto the grill or throw it into the oven or even throw it into that stock I was mentioning in poaching it. It's an easy, easy fish to cook. One of my favorite salmons, of course, as I mentioned a minute ago, Copper River salmon. It is absolutely fabulous because of the fat, but I just found out, what was the one that he was...
Fraser River.
So, and you see, he kept mentioning the fat, how much fat, because the salmon, as he mentioned, when the salmon swim back to go ahead and spawn, they actually quit eating once they hit the freshwater, so they need all of that fat in that they've accumulated for energy to get back to the spot where they were born to lay the eggs. And the shorter the distance or the more fat they have to accumulate, then the better that fish is going to be. So that's why Copper River is so great, and I just absolutely love it. Most of these salmon like this is a little pricey too, so you normally find them more located in the area unless you have friends to ship it in, or you can mail order it. And yes, it is going to be just a little bit more. In fact, a 3-ounce portion will be about the same price as a good filet mignon, you know. So it's you know, you gotta be willing to pay the price, right? And he mentioned all the different types of salmon that you he mentioned the king salmon, and he mentioned the sockeye salmon and the cohos when they run, you know. And
was interesting.
Yeah, coho is the least expensive of the Copper River salmon, of course, and they run late summer to early autumn. But you know, the flesh is that orange red color, and that the flavor is very mild. Great for grilling with the cohos. I really like them. And anyway, y'all, just ask your seafood supplier. My God, just walk up to the counter and say, I heard this great show about salmon. I hear it's wonderful. I've never really eaten what I think is great salmon. Help me out here. What should I get? And just get 2 little 4-ounce
What I was going to say too, one of the issues is there's the place it comes from, like you talked about Copper River, or Riley talked about British Columbia, the Fraser River. And then inside of all those is king salmon and sockeye and coho. So there's the two different.
No, that's right.
So when someone says, well, I've got some great king salmon, you can say, okay, well, where's it from? Or he says, well, I've got great Copper River. You say, okay, what kind? I mean, if you don't know very much about it, you go in, there's all these different choices, and they're saying, well, what do you want? And you're saying, a good salmon. And so there are those two different designations that sometimes get thrown out, and you're not entirely sure what that means to you. And so location and then kind of.
No, exactly. But
I got to make a note in my phone again. Well, excuse me.
What you got to make a phone for? Because
no, I'm making a notation about the rivers.
The
fattiest ones.
Oh, the fattiest
ones. I wrote that down in the show. What do you say? Chinook and sockeye.
Yeah, Chinook. Yeah.
Chinook first, then sockeye.
Named after the Chinook Indians, of course.
Of course.
Pacific Northwest, where you got...
of course.
I mean, I'm just in case you didn't know. But again, I encourage all of you, do not be bashful. That's what the fishmongers are behind the counter all these great seafood markets, especially epicurean stores. They spend a lot of money to bring in the best of the seafood, and when you see all of those varieties of salmon there, just walk up to the counter and say, I'm trying to experience salmon at its best. I don't know much about it. Tell me where am I in salmon. What's the least expensive? What's the most expensive? Why should I get this? And by the way, do you have a recipe? Can you give me a grilling recipe? Can you give me a sauteing recipe? And what about if I want to poach it? And they will be more than happy to give you all of that. Well, what about your roasting, Michelle? You say you roast your salmon in the oven. How do you do it?
Well, I just, you know, season it, salt, pepper, granulated garlic on all the sides.
And air.
Fish.
And air.
No, I know I probably should have some herbs on there.
I guess I've been forgetting
the herbs.
Didn't you tell me y'all planted an herb garden?
I do have some herbs.
Yeah, and you hadn't harvested any yet.
I haven't harvested my herbs.
You want to use those? Some.
Well, what herb should I use?
Thyme, basil, tarragon. Thyme, basil, tarragon. Tarragon loves fish.
I don't know that I have any tarragon.
Thyme loves fish. The first herb I plant in my garden, being a cook, is tarragon.
Okay, let me make sure I got that written down. Wait, I'm making another note.
Here we go. The first herb I plant in my garden is tarragon because it goes wonderfully with fish and chicken. And I'm going to eat more fish and chicken than I'm going to eat beef, not because I don't love beef. It's easier to cook and quicker. When I come home and I want to throw something on the grill, a little chicken breast or a little fillet of fish, and you want to have tarragon for that.
Yep. Okay.
Thyme, beautiful on fish. So the mixture of the three, the trinity of herbs, basil, thyme, tarragon, in equal proportions, chop them up, mix them together. Throw them on top of chicken, beef, lamb, doesn't matter. It's going to be excellent. Fresh cracked pepper, kosher salt. When I say fresh cracked pepper, it's okay if you don't have one of the mills, just use the one out of the box. But a little fresh cracked pepper is always wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a flavored salt, like I do, remember we went to New York for the Swamp People episode deal, and I went into that little shop and I got the seasoned salt, I got the truffle salt, and I got all of that. Beautiful on fish. I love it. Absolutely. A little truffle salt on top of it. But just use your regular salt and cracked pepper. Basil, thyme, the trinity of, John Foster's trinity of herbs. Basil, thyme, tarragon. Remember that, Cheryl.
Got it.
Even on corn. Even on boiled corn. Seriously. Be good. Okay, y'all ready for, how much time do I have? Do I have time to talk about a little poached salmon here? Okay. Now, you want to hear poached salmon? Mm-hmm. Or you want to hear grilled salmon? By the way, grilled salmon.
Or smoked salmon.
Smoked salmon is real. Mm-hmm. Smoked salmon you really just ought to buy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, y'all, of all the fish used for poaching, none, and I will say none, and I'm ready to debate it. It's better than salmon when it comes to good poaching. Now, of course, people will tell you about Dover sole. People may even mention a flounder. People might even throw in a butter poached salmon if they have a little chip on their shoulder. But I'm ready to say it's the salmon that's the best fish for overall poaching, none more flavorful. And the humble potato can give you one of the best sauces for salmon. And I learned this recipe. I actually cooked with one of my favorite chefs. You know my buddy from London, David Dunn.
David Chambers.
Met David Chambers. Well, David Chambers was a chef at the Meridian Hotel at Piccadilly, and when I was cooking there, he often served this dish on his banquets, and I just learned to love it. So for the Cubillon, not to be confused with the Roubaix Cubillon of the Cajuns, Cubillon is actually the French term for poaching liquid. Cubillon means to heat and to cool. So it's a bouillon, which is a liquid that you're heating up and then cooling to cook in. So you're going to have your Cubillon is going to have 4 ounces of white wine. I'm using a gallon of water because I'm doing a fair amount of fish here. I'm doing 6 nice salmon fillets. So I'm going to use a gallon of water, just 4 quarts, right? 4 ounces of white wine. I'm going to put 2 cups of peeled carrots, diced. I'm going to put about a half a cup of the whites of the leek. Of course, you could use just regular onions. I use 2 cups of diced onions, and then I'm making a flavorful liquid here, of course. 1 cup of diced celery, 4 chopped garlic cloves, 5 sprigs of parsley, and all of this is on our website. If you go to jfalls.com, the radio show, Stirring It Up, you're going to see all of this. The sprig of thyme, 1 bay leaf, 10 peppercorns, a little coriander seed, 3 of them, and salt and pepper in there. So basically, you've made this liquid by putting that gallon of water and a half a cup of dry white wine. Then you just put the carrots, the leeks, the onions, the celery, the garlic, the parsley, the thyme, all of that into a pot. And you're going to bring that to a boil, and you're going to let that simmer. You're going to reduce it and allow it to simmer for 20 minutes to put all of those flavors into the water. You with me? Did I lose you anywhere along the way?
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, and I want to encourage people, always use recipes not as a direct roadmap to get somewhere, but an idea of how to get somewhere. So you can add your own things to it. If you want to add another herb, go ahead. If you want to add the tarragon in, just go ahead and throw it in at this point. You want to add more garlic, please do. You know, just go ahead and play with it. So 20 minutes, the water or the Cubillon will pick up all of that flavor. Then you strain it all out into a sieve. Now you have about 3.5 quarts of that beautiful liquid. So what you're going to do is peel some potatoes at this point. You're going to just go ahead and take, say, just one potato, and you're going to cube it, and take about a quarter of that water, and you're going to poach the potato in that water until it gets nice and tender, and that's going to be pureed in a Cuisinart with that Cubillon liquid, and that's going to give you the potato sauce, and we're going to put that chive potato sauce recipe on the website for you as well. It's very simple to make. So what I'm going to do now, y'all, I'm going to take that liquid, I'm going to bring it to a rolling boil, I'm going to put my thermometer in it and get it down to 190 degrees, and then I'm going to pour it into a pan that is, you can even use one of the aluminum pans. What is that, about an 11 by 13 or something like that?
Yeah.
That the 6 salmon fillets can go into, and when the water gets to be about 190 degrees and the fish is down inside of it, you're going to pour that water on top of it, and you're going to allow it to sit in that hot water for about 10 to 15 minutes. If this is off the fire, I'll wrap it tightly with clear wrap to keep the steam of that 190 degree water in. And I need that 3 quarts at least, because I need enough water to retain the temperature. If I only used a quart, I could cover the salmon, but it would get cold.
God.
So I pour that 190 degree almost gallon of water on top of those 6 fillets, cover it tightly with clear wrap, keep it right on top of the stove, no fire under it, and let it sit for 10 to 15 minutes. The center of that fish will be moist. It will be kind of a cool center of that fish, which is exactly what a nice poached fish should look like. It's not raw in the center, but of course today people eat sushi all day long, and salmon is one of the best sushi fish. So people are used to eating raw salmon, so the poaching will give you kind of a cool center. And then, of course, you're going to take that potato sauce that I mentioned, that is just a poached potato poached in this same stock, and you just, you can put some herbs in that too, and you can put a ladle of that over the poached fish, and it's exactly the way the Scottish and exactly the way the Irish and the Englanders will eat a wonderful poached salmon. But to grill it, I would just do salt, pepper, a little granulated garlic, as Michelle said. I'd just rub some herbs on it, that trinity of herbs, the basil, thyme, and tarragon. And then, of course, I'd clean my grill nicely, and I'd get it on nice high heat until that grill's nice and hot. And then I would throw the salmon on skin side up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will take the skin off, but I'll do skin side up on the grill, and I'd leave it on there for about 5 to 7 minutes, and I would flip it over, the skin side down, and I'd close the lid and let the smoke kind of flavor that fish nicely. It cooks so quickly, then when you take the salmon off of that grill, the skin normally will stay on the grill, which is exactly what you probably want to do. I like to eat the skin myself, but a lot of people don't, and it cooks just beautifully, and again, you're going to have that nice rare center. Anyway, y'all, the recipe's on the website, jfalls.com. Go to Stirring It Up. Nothing better than salmon. It's one of the healthiest fish around. The great news, it's available in all of your wonderful stores, not only the Epicurean stores, all of the stores. Talk to the fishmonger, get the information on it, and remember to poach it, to grill it, or to bake it. It's going to be wonderful. See you next week.
This is Cheryl Castile. Join me each week on The Exchange, when we'll hear the stories and meet the people that make South Louisiana such a wonderful place to call home. Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays.